that will cover everything from health to alternative health to education, jobs, immigration. It's all stuff that's lifestyle. Pop-Off is going to be a live better, live longer, healthier in all parts of life magazine format. And we're going to bring you the best and the brightest. Welcome to Pop-Off. This is what it's all about, folks. We want to make sure that your day will start out right every day, Monday through Friday, from noon till 1, with the Pop-Off Radio Show, bringing you the best and brightest from all walks of life, from all over the world. We're starting today, and from now on, you're going to hear us every single day. Now, in addition to that, I want to make absolutely sure that you understand that what we're trying to do is magazine. Live better, live longer, live healthier, alternative health, you name it. We will pop off for you. I also will ask you to give me your ideas. Remember, Pop Off is not only my show, it is your show too. Pop Off is going to pop off every day, and I want to let you know that if you go to popoff.com, and that's two P's and two F's, P-O-P-P-O-F-F, popoff.com, email me, maryjade@popoff.com. I will try and bring you always something that's going to be good for your life, such as... And on Mondays, we're always going to start out with a very, very special lady. The special lady is Esther Baird. We'll begin our week in a positive light. We're going to check in to see if the week to be will be one that bodes well with our psychic numerologist. That's Esther Baird, who bears witness to the fact that she has our number. Esther, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Nice to have you with us on Pop-Off, Esther.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, and congratulations on your new show.
Oh, thank you so much. But, you know, you got to give us some ideas. We're at the state capitol. We're trying to solve all the problems of the world.
Okay.
But tell me, is this week, are we going to make it through in one piece this week?
Well, we should, but we need to watch out for some natural disasters and weird weather and stuff like that going on all over the world. It's already starting with Florida coming in with their tornadoes, and watch the volcanoes, watch all these strange things going on. So natural disasters, weather, expect the unexpected. That's going to go on this week.
Okay, so what about accidents, that type of thing? Be careful out there, any special...
Oh, yeah, this is a slow week. Part of us wants to go at 50 miles an hour, and the other part of us wants to just go, you know, sit and park and hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
So the cross between the two makes you want to go fast, but something out there is going to want to slow you down. So that's a bad combination for accidents.
Okay.
So you have to go slow and be real cautious about everything around you. Some of our... this week we don't have a lot of bad days. Today could be a little bit today and tomorrow because we have no patience. So if you have no patience, you want to go faster, and that's going to create an accident. But the worst day this week is going to be Saturday. And you watch out for mechanical problems.
What do I do? Just stay in bed and pull the covers over my head?
Oh, no, it's not quite that bad.
Oh, okay.
Not quite that bad. It's just you just want to go slow and just... You know, don't try to get there in a big hurry. Don't get there before after the accident. Get there before.
Gotcha.
You know, so just slow down and just be careful about everybody around you.
Now, this is the most important question. When can we go over to the casino and win big?
Oh, well, today is not a bad day. Tomorrow is also not a bad day. Even though we're going slow intuitively, we're working real good this week. And let's see, Thursday and Friday and Sunday. And Sunday is one of our best days for gambling.
Sounds good. Well, it sounds like it's not too bad a week after
all. No, just generally speaking, like I said, it's probably more of the natural disasters out there and people having no patience. Other than that, it's not a bad week.
Good. No full moon, no crazies, none of that stuff.
Not really.
At least not yet.
Not yet.
Okay, Esther, you have yourself a terrific week, okay?
Oh, well, you too, and congratulations again.
And we'll check out our numbers with you next week.
Sounds good.
Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye, sweetie.
Bye. It's always a week with a great start on Pop-Off. Oh, it is always California dreaming, folks. We're always making that dream come true for every person that we possibly can think of. But this gentleman serves as vice chairman for the Assembly Committee on Jobs, economic development, and the economy. Now, his focus has been on public education funding and improving California's economic outlook. Lord knows we need it, folks. Let me tell you, being in California, the kind of taxes that we have to pay, the kind of homes that we have to buy, it's incredible. And let's not even talk about the gas prices. His name is Assemblyman Guy Houston. He was named Legislator of the Year. That's prestigious, Assemblyman.
Yeah, I'll take that anytime I can get it.
Hey, you've got to use all those titles, right?
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit about education, not only in California, but education. We are 15th in the nation as far as education. And that, to me, bodes not very well for California, simply because we've got so much here. We're supposed to be the leader of the pack. What happened? We dropped to 15.
15, are you talking about in the states or in the world?
In the nation.
In the nation. Well, you know, we keep talking about, you know, funding for schools, quality of education as far as production of our kids and what they're really learning. I think we have a kind of a two-tiered system going here where we have the top students can compete with anybody in the world. What we have trouble with is we have a lower tier where we're just not reaching them. We have a dropout rate of 26% in California.
That's a big dropout rate.
If you don't go to class, how are you going to learn? But you have, in my district, the 15th Assembly District, my graduation rate is about 99%. So we have this two-tiered system there, and we need to work better to reach those that are not doing as well.
How do you feel about the exit exam? I mean, there's a lot of controversy about that in the state of California, and I'm sure this is going to go across the nation. I think it's a good idea. Let's find out if our kids can at least have English at the 8th grade level and mathematics at the 10th grade level. How do you survive in the world if you can't do that?
That's right, and you have to have some standards, and frankly, the diploma has to mean something. So I'm definitely in favor of the exit exam, and yes, there are some that aren't going to pass it, but we need to work on making sure that people can pass, have the ability to pass. But I kind of go back to my earlier comments. If you don't go to class, how are you going to expect to pass an exam like that?
Well, you know, I have to be honest with you. How does one expect everyone to pass? It doesn't always happen that way. Not everybody's going to make it through college. Not everybody's going to make it through high school. Maybe they need to go into a vocational education, something that they can handle. And believe me, vocational education, I'm not saying, is a demeaning thing by any stretch. I know you and I have taken our cars to the mechanic. Excuse me. I wish I were making the money that the mechanics are making. It's not bad.
That's right. And Governor Schwarzenegger is actually on a pilot program basis trying to reintroduce vocational education back into our schools. For a long time, it was, well, you have to learn on the computer. We're all going to go to the UC system, and that's the only way you're going to succeed. Well, we're finding, especially after the 2001 dot-com bust, people are saying that, you know, maybe the computers and maybe the high-tech stuff isn't the only way to go. So more and more schools are starting to bring back the vocational ed and the auto shop and shop classes, and those are great jobs, high-paying jobs in California that we're lacking the students that are capable of doing those jobs.
I mean, why force a person to go to college when that's not what they want to do in life? I did. I wanted to be a college prep. I went to a college prep high school. Wanted to make sure I got into a prestigious school so I can get my bachelor's, my master's, work on my PhD. But that's not for everybody, and it's not a demeaning thing not to be. We need to change our attitude about education and what education means to each individual person.
And maybe the idea is that you have different types of graduation or exit exams. One maybe can be for the traditional college track, but also for vocational ed. I have a good friend who had to go back to junior college to, he's a lathe operator, and he makes $85,000 a year.
Wow.
So that's a great job, and he had to go to some school to up his skills, but these aren't low-paying jobs. These are good ones.
Now, we're always saying we need more money. We need more money. Put more money in education. It will help our kids. I'm beginning to believe that the money thing is not what's going to solve our education problem.
I'm a big believer in local control. I think we should have the money should go to the local school districts, and they decide how it's spent. What happens is we have too much. Whenever Sacramento doles out money, they have strings attached to those dollars. And so I'd rather, you know, cut those strings and let local districts decide how to spend their dollars, how they can do it better, because everybody's not the same. We have 38 million people in this state. What works in San Diego doesn't work in Eureka. What doesn't work in Elk Grove. So we need to, you know, let people have the latitude to do what's best for their local communities.
And not only the local communities, but also how that money is spent. Is it going to be spent in administration? A certain amount of administration, yes. But it's got to trickle down. It's got to trickle down to the classroom, to the teacher who can decide what those kids need. So a teacher doesn't have to go out and spend money on pencils and basic materials that that classroom needs.
Right. I think, again, going back to the cutting the strings, we have these categorical programs where if you want the money from the state, you have to spend it in this area. And you should give the flexibility to the school districts. If they don't need to buy textbooks this year, then they should be able to fund counselors. They should make those decisions. You have to have some kind of administration. And yes, we always want to make it as thin as possible to have more money in the classroom. But the strings attached from Sacramento is a big problem. And Governor Schwarzenegger is trying to address that in the best way he can by having kind of lumping all these categories together and give more latitude and choice to local school districts.
But again, if we're going to try and fund the schools with more money, where's that money going to come from? I mean, our taxes are already pretty doggone high. And not only in California, I think nationwide people are, you know, have gotten to the point where they say, you know, I just can't do it anymore. I can't support my family. I can't put food on the table. I can't put gasoline in my automobile anymore.
That's a new one.
Oh, and that's a big one, especially in California. We'll talk about that right after we get done with this one. But again, where is that money going to come from? I love everyone when they're running for office. You know, oh, yes, we're going to do this. We're going to do education. We're going to do jobs. We're going to do economy. Oh, yeah? Well, where's the money going to come to do that?
Yeah, we can't do everything. Where the money's coming from in a lot of areas has changed over the years. We have a big emphasis on infrastructure this year, and we're having bonds in the ballot for transportation and for the levies and for schools as well. So, you know, unfortunately, we're instead of doing it the old-fashioned way, which is take it out of your general fund, we're borrowing more money, and that impacts our future as well. So how we spend our money and how we allocate those resources has changed over the years. I think we should do more pay-as-you-go and not be borrowing the money to fund these very important programs.
And don't we need to go back to some of the basics? When I said we need a new attitude in education, seriously, if you look at European countries, education is at the top of the list. Parents want their kids to get an education. When they come to this country, especially the Asian population, I mean, that is the primary thing. Get an education. If you have an education, then you can move yourself up in the rung of the ladder and move to whatever you want to do. We don't seem to have that in this country. We've become very lazy with our educational values.
Well, certain peoples treat education differently. I was just in Ireland in April, and we saw a study of all the European countries on how much money they spend on their education system. And frankly, we spend a lot more than them on our education, but their production, what they learn and getting out of the system, is a lot greater than ours. So I think ultimately it all goes back to the home. If mom and dad care about education and make sure that the kids are doing the homework and get to bed early, well, you know, they're going to be okay. And we have some areas where that isn't the case.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you want to do the best for your kids, but you all, as you said, it has to start at home. But then once they're out of the home and in that classroom, you know, we expect a certain level of greatness to a certain extent, especially in this country. We've got more resources.
Yeah, we're in California. We should expect greatness.
Well, not the country itself. I mean, we've got resources here that other countries couldn't even begin to dream about, and yet it doesn't seem like we're utilizing correctly.
And another thing I did learn on my trip overseas was one thing that we have the envy of the world is our secondary education. Our colleges, our universities, we are second to none in the world. We have more people going to college than any place. We lack a little bit in the K through 12 in the younger grades, but we have invested a lot of money in university in the United States, and that pays off as well. So there's pluses and minuses, different ways of doing things, but we always need to do better.
Well, I know what you're talking about because I actually taught when I was working my master's and my PhD, both on the grade school level and the high school level and the college level. Now, I love teaching on the college level because if they didn't like it, get out. You know, it's real simple. But you can't do that in the lower grades. You have to do the best you possibly can for the class that you have. I think that's the reason the level in college is great, because it's the effort that goes into going into college to even get into a college anymore is not that easy.
That's right. And in the lower grades, you have a lot of folks are sending their kids to private schools because they want to be in a situation where people are challenged, where they want to excel. And so you see a proliferation of private schools in California, and I don't know about the country, but in California I know that's the case. And so people want what's best for their kids. They want to have that challenge And sometimes that's where they find it, is in private schools.
Now, I know you're an assemblyman on the state level, but I think this issue that just came out, it was in the news this morning, with regards to a federal bill that would not allow the desecration of the American flag, the burning of the flag, whatever, any kind of desecration. What is your stand on that?
I would support that, absolutely. You know, I think it's, you know, right now we have people overseas, you know, fighting and dying for our country and for our flag, and so I think it's a crime. It's literally a crime. Somebody would desecrate our flag. I remember when I was younger, I remember Rick Monday from the Chicago Cubs, when somebody tried to burn a flag in the outfield of a Chicago Cubs baseball game, he went out there and got that flag, and he was a national hero at the time. Why it's taken us maybe 20 years later where we're still talking about this kind of issue is amazing to me. I think that it's something that definitely I would support. Obviously, that's something that's going to be coming from the federal level.
Well, and there's a lot of discussion around that, and I have to tell you now, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent. That means I think. I actually do think about who I'm going to choose, and I choose from both sides, believe me. But I think of the people that are going to go into office and what they're going to do for us. However, when I think about the burning of the flag, yes, it breaks my heart. My husband was a Vietnam vet. We went through the whole nine yards with regards to what's going on, et cetera. And, you know, I have to tell you, I don't want to take away that First Amendment rights either. You know, that's a First Amendment right to be able to speak up and speak out in this country, no matter how much I abhor it. If I saw someone bring a flag, it would not be past me to go up there and slap them in the face. I mean that honestly. But I want to have that opportunity to do that. They should have the opportunity to do what they're doing.
Well, but there are some times we have to make some hard choices in our country, because you have the issue right now where the people are going to funerals of our service members who have died in battle, and they're protesting at funerals of our fallen military. You could say they have the right to free speech as well, but at some point you have to draw the line. And I think I draw the line at desecration of our flag, and certainly honoring the people that have died for our country. We can't have people that are desecrating that either.
I understand what you're saying. Let's talk a little bit about this gas thing. I am absolutely amazed when we talk about, we hear the stories across the country and what the cost of gas is. You know, some states are paying $2.67 a gallon, some are paying $2.99 a gallon, we're paying $3-something a gallon. I almost get the feeling, Assemblyman, and you have to bear with me here, okay? It seems like they push it up 50 cents, and then we go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Then they bring it back down another 50 cents, and we feel comfortable. And then they do it again, and they push it a little bit farther so that you feel comfortable with the next 25 or 50 cents, so that we're almost grateful when they drop it back another 25.
Well, I think gas prices, usually the complaint we get is, why is it so much more expensive in California? And the reason for that is California, we have the highest air standards in the country, and so the formula for our gas is different than the rest of the country. I'd love to pay the national average. What'd you say? It was in the high twos, 280, 290. I'd love to pay that, but I'm paying 340, 350 right now because of the rules and regulations that we have in California. So is it the best bang for our buck is to have these standards, or is it maybe we can conform to the rest of the country so we can have our gas cheaper, which ultimately is better for jobs and better for homes and families?
Well, you know, there is a certain frustration level, Assemblyman, because, you know, we go to the Bay Area, we see all those big refineries, and we go, well, excuse me, where's our oil coming from that we're having such a problem? Are we not getting oil from those refineries? Are we getting it more from Mexico and from overseas than we are from our own state?
Well, where the oil comes from, I don't know, but where it's refined, we have a lot of it refined here in California. But again, there's different formulas for all different gas. So in a pinch, when we have a shortage, we can't just call up our friends in Arizona and Nevada and say, send us over some oil, because we have different formulas, and so we can't buy from there. So we get a shortage, the prices go up. So we are as much to blame for, and we meaning the legislature, we have as much to
Thank
blame.
Thank you. Finally, you get
We have as much to blame for the higher gas prices than anybody else. Plus, nobody ever seems to talk about is the taxes that government taxes gas and oil at a high rate. So when the gas goes up a quarter, you know, nobody talks about the 50 cents of taxes that you're paying on that gallon of gas as well. So there's plenty of blame to go around. On a macro level, we have India, we have China, who's competing for this now globally, and I frankly don't see it coming down anytime soon.
Really? So So in other words, the house, do you see any kind of ceiling on it?
Well, I think you look over and see what's happening in Europe, where they're paying $5 and $6 a gallon, or liters, or whatever they have over there.
Yeah.
But it's you know, we're still low in the world, but we're looking at competition. China is growing by leaps and bounds. India is a growing economy, even though they have 1 billion people. They're still at a very low level, and so they want to thrive and grow just like we do. And that's competition, and unfortunately, it's driving up the prices.
Well, and it's driving up the prices, but it's also driving up the prices in the family. I mean, how can people get around? Other parts of the country, there is mass transit, which is much better. I originally came from the Chicago area, and you really didn't use your car that much. There was transportation that generally, yeah. And you had no problems. But this is California. It's a little bit different. It's a huge state. This is the number, what, sixth nation state in the world?
That's right. I think what we need to do, we need to demand more out of your government. And look at those taxes. There's a lot of taxes that are paid to the state. And so before you start looking at the supply and demand and trying to change that, let's look at how much we're extracting out of the system on a state level. 50 cents a gallon is a lot. And that's money that could go into the pockets of our businesses and the pockets of our families in California.
And, of course, I've had some people on the air, and I, you know, they may be just promoting their own benefits or doing things, but they're saying, you know, we do have a great deal of oil still in this country if we know how to refine it correctly. Yes, you got to go deeper for it. Yes, you have to find new processes to get it. But we're not. It doesn't seem like we're looking for that. We're always looking for the overseas oil and paying a big price for it.
Yeah, that's easier and cheaper to go overseas. Right now, I understand that we have a huge deposit of shale oil, which is getting the oil out of rock. And in Wyoming and Utah and in the central part of our country, we have 300 years worth of oil in our own country. It's a different way. It's a little bit more expensive to process. And as the prices go up, I think you can see there's going to be some innovation and some opportunities there as well. So we're not going to be – the best thing would be not be beholden to the Middle East for our oil because of all the problems that associate with that. So we need to look and see how we can be as self-sufficient as possible.
I mean, to be honest with you, I'm glad you mentioned that simply because, look, we went into Iraq. Whether we agreed with it or not to begin with, it's too late. We're there. We got to deal with it at this point. So that's not an argument of going anymore. It's an argument of how do we deal with it from here on. But what bothers me is that we're not any better off with the oil situation in this country. If anything, it's gone up at least a dollar a gallon since the whole Iraq war started. So we're not benefiting from any of that. So where do we go from here? How about taking a lesson from what the Canadians are doing? They're taking it from dirt. They have found a process that is much cheaper than ever before. They never were able to do it. I guess it's almost like a sponge. You squeeze it out of the black dirt that they have.
Yeah, I think that's the shale oil.
And
there's a tremendous amount. And frankly, if we have to pay too much for gas, I'd rather pay too much to Americans and Canadians than I would to people in the Middle East. So those opportunities are, you know, technology is getting better. Even from our existing oil reserves, the way to extract it is easier, and the shale oil is an option. And from what I understand, we have hundreds of years worth of supply there. And as prices go up, it's going to make it more economical. Again, if we're going to pay too much, I'd rather pay to our own people.
Well, not only our own people, but if we haven't ticked off Canada as badly as we have in last
year.
Let's be honest. No, we have. We've made fun of them for so long that I even wonder if they would even bother to work with us anymore.
I'm sure we would. I'm sure we're still friends.
Now, the other thing, too, talking about friends, let's talk a little bit about Mexican President Vicente Fox. You would think that he would be a friend. You know, we are supporting a great deal of his people in this country, illegally, I might add, but we're supporting him. That's another issue we can get into a little bit later. But there's a lot of oil in Mexico. How come we're not getting oil from Mexico?
I don't know. I don't know what the flow of oil from Mexico is. I don't know if it's the right kind of oil. I just don't know that. Vicente Fox, the president of Mexico, spoke to the legislature about a month ago. He was here and spoke to us, talked about, you know, cooperation and working together, and I did respect the fact that he was here, and I was glad that I was here to hear him in his speech. But frankly, I don't think he's done enough in his own country. The reason why people are coming to this country
It's
not for the sunshine, because they got it where they come from.
These people can't make a living there.
They need to do a better job employing their people and giving opportunities instead of having a system where we're basically the welfare state for the country of Mexico. We need to make sure that they are doing a good job for themselves. I didn't hear enough from him say how he's going to revitalize his economy, make sure the people want to stay there. But ultimately, I think they want to stay in their country. But they need to be able to feed their families and take care of them. And they're not doing a good job there. In fact, they're doing a bad job.
Well, instead of putting out circulars on how to be able to cross our borders, when his southern border, believe me, he doesn't let anybody cross over at his southern border.
We treat their people a lot better than they treat the people from Panama and other Central American countries. So, yeah, there's a double standard there going on. And again, I respect the fact that he was here and talking to us, and I did learn a lot. But they need to do better. They have to step up to the plate. They can't just keep asking of the United States of America.
Fantastic. Sullivan Houston, I thank you so much for being
thank
with us.
Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Come back and visit anytime.
Anytime. Let me
appreciate
know.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
That's, again, Sullivan Guy Houston. So where do we go from here? Well, let's take a look at our future with a fond look at life on Pop-Off. And I thought you might find it kind of fun just to hear something that would give you a feeling of what I'm talking about and what I think life is all about as far as we are concerned. Listen to this.
Remember election day and election night and election week and election month? Everybody was getting incredibly frustrated.
I stayed up late to watch them counting the votes while all the networks were rescinding their quotes. At first it went for Gore and then it goes to Bush. Forget that recount, I got a new plan to push. Well, I want a brand new pair of candidates. I say they both have lost. I want to hold a new election. I'd gladly pay the cost. Tell them it's Nashville and Austin. I don't like what I see. Oh, find me a brand new pair of candidates. Someone like Martin Sheen.
Of course, you're listening to Pop Off. We are coming to you live, absolutely live, from the state capitol in California. I want to make sure that I give you a really good idea, though, of what we're trying to do. Today, it sounds like we're a political show. That's not what we're about. I want to let you know that. Yes, we will have an integration of some politics, simply because you can't get away with not having politics in your life and surviving. That's just the way life is. So, yes, there will be a little bit of politics. When it has to do with issues that are of concern to you and to me, like health, like education, these are all things that are part of our life, whether we like it or not. So what I'm trying to explain to you, though, is that Monday and Tuesday, today and tomorrow, only will be more a political bent because we are coming to you from the state capital of California. And we like to have some of the politicians to kind of address some of the major issues in the world today. Some of the other issues that we want to cover today is, of course, things like and not only education and health, which we've already done, but also immigration and jobs. All of that is all part of what we want to do. Because in California, we have a little bit of a problem. The problem is, well, listen to this. It'll give you a pretty good idea of what I mean. Okay, we are talking to you from the state capitol, and we want to make sure that you know that what we're doing here is having a lot of fun, but not fun at anybody's expense. Fun at the idea of having guests on to give us some idea of what's going on in the world so that we can address these issues. And with us, I'm going to have you say your name again.
Chuck Poochigian.
Poochigian.
Yes.
Is that an Armenian name?
It is an Armenian name.
It's got to be Armenian. Yes, it's got to have it.
He's a good friend.
Nice man. He was a great governor, by the way.
He was a great governor, and I got to work for him in his office for a couple of years, and that was one of the great experiences of my life.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we talked a little bit already about education. We've talked a little bit about the job situation. We talked about a little bit about health care, but I want to get a little bit more into the health care because this is a major issue, I think, for most people in the country. People are afraid to get sick anymore. You know, they don't know if they should run to the HMO. They don't know if they have their own doctor. Thank God, you know, we thought ahead of time, and we can choose our own doctor. And I'm not going to point fun here at either the state level or the federal level, but you guys have good health care, so you don't have to worry about it. But us folks on the bottom, we got some worries, don't you think?
I think everybody does. I think the system clearly, and it doesn't matter if you're a very conservative Republican or a very liberal Democrat, you encounter difficulties, and you know, families do have a tough time meeting their needs in terms of health care. It's so different than it was some years back. The burdens we place on the system have been great over the years. Some of the problem is has to do with the market. Some of it has to do with burdens that are placed on that system. Some of it, a lot of it has to do with the burdens we place on the system in terms of mandated care and so on. There are a lot of things we can do, and there's a lot of experimentation taking place. And while each state crafts its own approaches, the reality is that it affects everybody all over America.
Is there a way, in your opinion, that we can have some sort of health care that goes with the person? Because anymore, it used to be, when I was growing up, and believe me, I've been around a few years, and you'll understand what I'm saying. Somebody stayed in a job till they retired. They worked there for 40, 50 years. Now we're talking about 4, 5, 6 positions in a person's lifetime, and they've got to be able to move. And the health care is not always into the next position that they go to.
Right. You're absolutely right. The mobility of society today compared to when you and I were growing up is very different. It is astounding. Portability is always seems to be a part of every discussion, no matter what the health care reform that's being proposed. Portability meaning, of course, that you do get to take it with you. I like to see, I mean, as we grapple with this very, very vexing problem, I would like to see us look at ways of, you know, innovative ways of embracing ideas like health savings accounts, where people can have a little more to say about their, you know, their own opportunities in terms of health care. One thing we're talking a lot about in the legislature now. We've been talking about it for years. I'm hopeful. I wish that we are to the point where we can get serious and actually enact something that will give more.
I have to be a little upset with President Bush when the whole prescription drug issue came about. Now, I have a PhD, sir, and I looked at some of that. My mother, God rest her soul, passed away in the year 2000. But if I had to try and explain it to her today with my PhD, I couldn't understand it. It's so confusing. And then he comes out and says, well, you just have to find somebody to explain it to you. Well, why don't you try and find somebody to explain it to you?
Well, you know, I understand your frustration because I have some of that myself. I have a family member who's in the same boat. And I even called her and I said, hey, have you checked this out? You got a deadline coming up. You've got to meet this deadline. But I don't, you know, you mentioned the president. Of course, he's the one, he pushed for this, but the product was one that was crafted through the legislative process, negotiated, and, you know, unfortunately, common sense and simplicity are in short supply when it comes to the crafting of stuff. And really, Congress, you know, put its mark on this thing, and, you know, good idea, bad idea, or whatever. The fact of the matter is, it is way too complicated.
It is complicated, and I think most people, and my mother and father-in-law are both still alive because they're just in their 70s, which anymore doesn't mean a whole lot. Of course, you and I are going to live to be at least 150, so we don't have to worry about that. But they were confused, and they basically stayed with what they had. And I think a lot, and I'm not saying the majority or even the vast majority by any changes are, right, I should say the imagination, but I think a lot of people just said, hey, you know, I don't want to make a change. If I don't understand it, I'll just keep what I have.
Well, that's human nature. That's a default for many of us. I certainly have been in the same boat myself on a couple of choices I've had in terms of my employment package. I you know, I know that people do that, and it's too bad.
Yeah. And again, the country, and I say this over and over, and I have in the last 40 minutes, it's a lot of the same things over again, but I can't help it. The country that has the most advanced in medical care, the most number of doctors and hospitals and the best of care, really, and then not be able to give that to our citizens, it's frustrating. Very, very, very frustrating, don't you think?
I do. I certainly do, and I agree with you in terms of health care, in terms of the health professionals in our country. I have a daughter-in-law. We just had our first, my wife and I, first grandchild.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And our son and daughter-in-law have been, you know, dealing with the system in terms of the birth of the child. Thank you. Thankfully, everything went just great. But, you know, every time you walk in the hospital, you see all the folks there and what's going on, and they, health care is something that a lot of younger people don't think about.
No.
And
well, they're going to live forever.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
there's a sense of immortality
and invincibility. Sure.
But the reality is that we all have to face up to it eventually. And, the public policy makers are charged with the responsibility of trying to repair it. I'm a believer in a free market. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent possible, my preference is to see reform models that are market-based more so than government, you know, central planning through government.
Can we trust people to do the market? The example I use, when we have hurricanes, you've got people coming out of the woodwork, taking advantage of people. Now, I know it's so much human nature there, and there's always going to be some bad seed someplace. But how do we control that? People are taking advantage of it, especially if they don't understand what's going on.
Well, you want to make sure that you have law in place and a system in place that where you can go after the scoff laws or go after those who are abused. There's no question about that. We need to have a way of adjudicating claims in the system and so forth. But that's not an argument against a market-based model where you have more choice, more opportunity to get value and also get the quality of health care that you deserve.
How can people turn to... or who can people turn to find out more information so that they can be a part of the process of making the decision?
Well, at the state level, it's key that they work with their local legislators and people need to be responsive. Those who they elect need to be responsive to their concerns. And, you know, it's an ages-old problem, or at least it's a decades-old problem in terms of how to improve our healthcare system. But I think being vigilant, being attentive, having relationships with people who have a vote in places like the state legislature is very important. So attend those community forums. Talk to your legislator. Call and express your concern and offer your thoughts, and somebody will listen. The body, maybe your individual call is not going to get the attention that you think you deserve, and there'll be times you'll be frustrated. But collectively, change can occur as a result of the weight of public interest in change.
And, Senator, when you talk about contacting your legislator, I agree with you. I think that's the way to do it. But how expansive should your letter or your call be, or how specific? How can they get involved? I mean, I think people are at a point where they're saying, just tell me what to do.
Well, you know, people have varying degrees of sophistication and relationships and so forth, so it just depends. Do it in the way you think best. One thing I'll tell you as an office holder that gets a lot of email and correspondence and phone calls, one thing that doesn't work is to start out by attacking, saying you people are all, you know, awful and we hate you and you need to fix this and here's what it is. You know, if you start out with that, I mean, salesmanship 101, you know, you don't start out by attacking the person who you want to be receptive and attentive. I mean, we have to, at the same time, as a public official, you have to realize that there are people who are so distraught,
frustrated
sure. that they're going to say things that maybe in a calmer environment they wouldn't say, and they want to lash out at a public official. And so some of it you take it with a grain of salt, but sometimes it gets a bit excessive, and it's not particularly helpful.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about, and I did ask the assemblyman who was on just before you about this, we are very frustrated with the gas prices in the state of California. I think the whole nation is, but it's worse here than any place else. And we don't know what to do anymore. Who do we turn to? And I know the feds are taking most of the taxes out of that, so it's like 50 cents, 55 cents goes to the feds. How much more are they going to drain from us?
Boy, I don't know. I have to tell you that I was at a service station last night driving up to Sacramento from Fresno, where my home is.
Yeah.
And I pulled off about midway, and I paid $3.07 a gallon, and I was talking to the fellow who was at the pump next to me and said, hey, boy, it's really come down. He said, yeah, it sure has. And if you think back about a year that I'd be boasting or thankful that I'm paying $3.07 a gallon, I wouldn't believe that. But
that's what I just talked to the assemblyman before, and he kind of poo-pooed what I said. I feel like they inch it up, like almost a buck, And then when they bring it back, $4, or to have 50 cents less, and they go, so thank you. You know, so it's such a relief to have it bitten gum down again.
Well,
I feel like they're playing us.
Well, I think the broader question is, what are we going to do to meet our expanding population and the need? And commerce requires that we have fuel. And unfortunately, with what's going on in the Middle East and the fuel that we have and the inadequate supply that we have, has a direct impact on the market. And while there may be, I don't know, I'm not prejudging, there may be some irregularities here or there that need addressing. The reality is we need to have an energy policy that involves more energy, whether it be fossil fuels and more exploration opportunities, or moving to more environmentally positive, things like ethanol,
right.
Whatever it is, we better do it. I mean, some of the strongest voices in Congress on this topic are people who have been absolutely opposed to any new exploration.
Don't you love it?
It's crazy.
I know.
And unfortunately, too many people give them the break and let them have it both ways, and we shouldn't let them get away with it.
Well, now I gotta point a finger here then, okay? Not to you.
No.
But to Governor Schwarzenegger. He's saying, get out there and have that alternative fuel and get your hybrids. And he's driving around a Hummer. Excuse me.
Well, I think his Hummer fleet is down dramatically.
Well, he shouldn't have a Hummer, period. Or if you're going to have a hybrid Hummer.
You know what? He came to office with the Hummer. So we probably have to cut him some slack. I think.
No, I'm not going to cut him any slack. He can afford to get rid of that Hummer and buy himself a hybrid. He goes, I love him. Don't get me wrong. I interviewed Governor Schwarzenegger in 1974-75 when he was pumping iron.
Really?
His first movie. And I was a cub reporter. So, we go back a long time. So I can point a little bit of a finger at him. But he's a star.
So you saw Lou Ferrigno at the same time.
You got it. I interviewed him, too.
Wow.
Are you kidding? Sure. As a matter of fact, Lou Ferrigno was around here just about 5 or 6 years ago and still doing stuff. So,
I'll be darned.
But anyway, it's just one of those things where, example. Give us an example of doing this kind of thing, and maybe the rest of us would follow suit. So anyway, but I have to point that finger.
Thank you.
Will you take that message back for me?
Well, I'll take all the things you say back.
Tell him Mary Jane Pop said,
okay.
She knew you since 1975. You stop driving that Hummer.
Okay, I'll tell him.
I appreciate it. And I thank you so much for
Thanks,
being
Mary
here,
Jane.
Senator. This has been great.
Thank you so
and
much
I hope
for having me.
If you buy tomorrow, come over and visit again.
Okay, we'll do it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Take care. Senator Husidjian, he's a nice guy. He's really taken a lot. He takes it on the cuff by just sitting down and doing this with us. Now, this is what I wanted you to hear a little bit earlier, because I had a song that I actually wrote the lyrics for, and the music was done by one of the local studios. And I want you to hear this while we're setting up for our next interview. You're going to find this, I think, fun.
Anything you have is fine. Save our broken faith. We must take a stand. Future is in our hands. Our country knows we lead the way. We'll fix it with our pay. Wake up to a brighter day. Save our broken faith. Politicians play their game. They're simply all the same. Not a word of truth in what we hear. They live in ivory towers. Let's get back to people power. Futures resting in our hands. It's time to make a change. Time for us to rearrange. Save the golden flame.
People, we can make a difference here. We can change the golden state. You have to make it for us and help us to do that. That's what it's all about, folks. I love doing that song, and I always have to play that. I'm going to play that for every politician that I have on the air with me, so that they have. Listen, that we're not saying that you're all crooks and all that kind of stuff, Senator, but, we sometimes wonder. We're really happy to have with us Senator Jeff Denham. Senator Denham was recognized as Legislator of the Year by the California State Sheriff's Association in 2004, Outstanding Legislator in 2005, Legislator of the Year by the California Small Business Association.
Gil, I could spend the rest of the 15 minutes just saying all the titles you've got. This is so cool. This means they really respect you.
And one thing that's not on there, I'm the lowest paid legislator up here.
Well, join the crowd. Broadcasters are not making any more than you are. We're doing it for the love of it. Aren't you doing it for the love of it?
Absolutely.
Now, when we talk about taxes, this is one of the things, especially in California, you know, we're saying, my God, we're being taxed to death. We can't handle this anymore. We got the taxes, you know, I was just talking about gas taxes with Senator Prasidgian. And I mean, you know, 55 cents of that goes to the feds. We've got state taxes. We can't buy a house in California anymore and it's an affordable home unless you're in Sacramento. And even that, you know, I talked to some of my friends across country in, you know, Mississippi or even, you know, Virginia and Carolina. And I go, they say, well, what's the average home out there sell for? And I say, oh, about $350,000. And they almost have a heart attack on the other side of the phone. What are we doing? You know, we're taxing people to the point where they can't handle it anymore.
No, absolutely. I think that the entire population here in this state are very frustrated with taxes, both Republican and Democrat, and it will be a very interesting top-of-the-ticket run with the governor this year to see how that all plays out. But we are overtaxed on every single category. We just saw two propositions that went down, one of which would have taxed the rich, and as we've seen, there are many that are in that top 1% bracket that continue to move out of our state because they are overtaxed.
Yeah. Well, we are losing business, and since I do some of the entertainment types of things, too, I mean, we lost like 50% of the Hollywood business, any of the movies, that type of thing. They're all going away because they can do it much cheaper in Canada, for God's sake. You know, they go up to Victoria and shoot 20% less. Why produce a film in California when they can go up there and do it for 20% less and make more for their stockholders?
Absolutely. Beautiful studios that have now been built down in Mexico.
That's another, yeah. So where... What can we do? I mean, the poor sap on the bottom of the hill, bottom of the rung, said, I've got to pay the taxes. I don't want to land up in jail. So what do they do?
Well, bringing business back to the state has been a focus of ours. One of the things that we've done already is improve workers' comp. But we've still got a long way to go on that. But the biggest issue right now is the overtax across the board on many different areas. That, you know, income tax, for one. We still see Reno and other areas outside of California continue to market in all of our newspapers saying, come to our state, you'll save a lot of money. You may be a little more expensive in transportation, but if you come here, you will not be taxed, and that tax will not only be offset, but we'll offer you incentives.
Most of the people that I know don't even incorporate in California anymore. They can incorporate in Delaware or Nevada, and Nevada's closer.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of business we're losing.
It's huge. Huge. I mean, the amount of corporate taxes are astronomical, but just on our everyday taxes, I mean, our taxes were once around 5 or 6% on sales tax, and now is ballooning up to about 8% in most counties. We're seeing a lot of ballot initiatives there on a local level. Our gas tax, we're not only get charged by the feds, but we also have a state tax, and that state tax even taxes the tax, which is... unconstitutional.
You think?
And we are, you know, we're seeing record surpluses right now. We had $9 billion of unanticipated revenue in January, an additional $5 billion of unanticipated revenue in the May revise. Part of that is due to $100 million every month that comes in because of our high gas prices. I mean, the gas has gone up on a large scale, but when the price per gallon goes up, the taxes also go up because it's based on a per dollar amount. Mm-hmm. So, you know, $100 million a month right now, that money should go back to, you know, people at the pump.
Basic needs again. I mean, because we are in a state where you have to have that. You have to have transportation. If we're living in Chicago, I'm originally from Chicago years and years ago. I feel like I'm in a California now. I've been here since 77. So, but there they have mass transportation. We don't have it out here.
No.
We have no choice. We've got to drive that car. They always look at us and go, you Californians, you always want to be in your car. Give me an option. You know,
no,
I've got to get to work.
We're held hostage. And, you know, when people's gas at the pump has doubled, you know, that's got to come from somewhere. You're on a fixed income. You cut out the family vacation this year. And some may be cutting out more than that, basic necessities.
Now, I got to ask you a couple of questions just about kind of the international scene and what's happening. There was a big story yesterday and today about the suicides at Guantanamo. How do you feel about this whole situation with Guantanamo? How long are we going to keep those prisoners down there without trying them?
You know, I believe in an expedient trial, but we've also got to make sure that as the trials go on, that justice is done. And I've been frustrated that we've seen so many get off on technicalities, whether we're talking about Guantanamo Bay or even here stateside. We need to have stronger laws in California that are followed up on the books.
And shouldn't they just be, we got to get going sometime and try them. Are we going to keep them down there for another 10 years? Because it doesn't look like we're getting out of Iraq anytime soon.
No, I believe that regardless of what the crime is, and I believe that there was a huge crime committed here, we've got to have an expedient trial.
Yeah.
There's no reason that we should be holding on to people and at a taxpayer expense. Guilty or innocent should be proven right away.
Yeah, because simply by having these suicides, it's making us look really bad. You know, because people are becoming suicide in jail. Now, this is not a good thing. And the image of the United States, we're having some problems right now around the world. They don't look to us like they used to look to us.
No, we've got a huge PR battle here. Absolutely.
And so, you know, we have to kind of look to where, and that's going to be reflective on every state in this union. It's not going to be only California. It's not going to only be Florida. It's going to be the whole country. We used to go overseas and people would say, oh, Americans, wonderful. Now they go, oh, Americans. You know, this is not good. Everybody they still want to come here because I think the opportunities are still good. But we have to change the image of what's happening in this country. Are we in another situation where it's going to be, and I hate to say the word Vietnam because everybody says, well, you can't compare the two. Yeah, you can when you're stuck. And I think we're stuck.
Yeah, I think on a national level, we've got to have clear objectives and a clear exit strategy and making sure that we've accomplished our goals. Ultimately, we've got to make sure that the people that live here in this nation are safe from terrorists. And I think that we did have a battle there, and we continue to have a battle. But at some point, we've got to wrap it up, and we need to figure out what that exit strategy is.
You betcha. Well, listen, keep up the good work that you're doing. Keep the governor, because I love to pick on him periodically. He can handle it. No problem. And do the best you possibly can for our state, and let us be kind of the leaders that say we're a good example, not an example, but a good example for the rest of the country so that we all work together to make the best that we possibly can for everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us, Senator. Come back and visit again real soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Take care now. That's Senator Jeff Denham. And, of course, I want to thank all of you for being with us on Pop Off today. You betcha. We're going to be back with you tomorrow. We will have a lot of good information for you and information that I think you will enjoy, information that will make a difference for you. That's what we're looking for, is to make a difference in your life. And your life is what it's all about on Pop Off. So stay with us. Don't go away. There's more on BBSRadio.com coming your way. But Pop Off will be back with you at high noon tomorrow with more of the best and the brightest. PopOff.com is the website you can go to, MaryJaneOfPopOff.com. Would love to hear from you, any of your comments, ideas, anything that you have for us, we'd appreciate it. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, you dare to dream. That's what it's all about.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.